Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, May 24, 2016. I'm Jason Powell. Kind of a change in plans today. I was up too late covering the Shane McMahon interview and decided to hold off on doing a Raw audio review, and so I'm going to combine this. Normally, this would be a member-exclusive show, and today it's going out as an all-access show. It kind of helps give everyone on the free side an idea of the long-form television and pay-per-views we do as well. In fact, Jake Barnett and I got together for 81 minutes to discuss the Extreme Rules show on Sunday night. But this show, all about WWE Raw coming out of Extreme Rules. The show was in Baltimore, Maryland at Royal Farms Arena, and this was a show that I was very excited about going into because it felt like they wrapped a lot of things up at the Extreme Rules show, and I knew we had a month until Money in the Bank, and there are times where they kind of pull back on that first show and then give their three-week standard hype, and in this case, we ended up finding out a lot about where things are going as far as the Money in the Bank match is concerned. We know the Money in the Bank main event. And I really was, I thought if you looked at the show on paper, when they started advertising the matches on the pre-show for the Money in the Bank qualifiers, and we knew Seth Rollins was returning, I was really expecting this to be a hot night. I didn't come away very impressed by last night's Raw. Not that it was all bad, not that I'm dreading the Money in the Bank match itself by any means. I think the match looks pretty good on paper with five of, I think, the seven qualifiers so far. They're going to do two more matches on SmackDown. So it's not like I question that. Can't say that I felt like there was a really good atmosphere in Baltimore. And I know as soon as I say that, I'm going to start hearing from people who were there who are going to say that it was great and all this, and maybe it was poorly mic'd. I don't know. I just know that watching the show on television, aside from a few segments, I didn't feel like the crowd was into a whole lot. Maybe the entrances, and then kind of sitting on their hands during some of the matches. And I'm not blaming the crowd. I blame WWE. I just didn't feel like this was a hot show. Before we start getting into it, let me tell you that I will be on the PW Torch livecast today. It's normally a noon central start. However, Wade Keller was in New York enjoying his birthday weekend. He will not be hosting the show. Instead, I will be on with Bruce Mitchell, Uncle Bruce. He is going to be hosting the show, and because of that, we will actually be back to our old time slot for 1 week only, I believe. It's 4 Central, 5 Eastern, and your phone calls are welcome on the show today. PWTorchLivecast.com is where you can listen to the show and find the call-in information. We would love to hear from you during the show if you want to talk about Raw. Maybe you disagree with what I'm about to tell you here, given my take on last night's Raw. I don't know if this will be a pop. I haven't really got a good feel from people. Get the usual complaints on Twitter. You get a lot of those. Haven't seen a whole lot of defenses, so maybe I'm not in the minority on this one. I don't know, but we'll work our way through, and then you guys can call me on the live cast today and let me know if you think I'm off on this. They open things up with clips from Extreme Rules. Of course, Michael Cole, JBL, Byron Saxton on commentary. It was episode 1200 of WWE Raw. At one point, somebody said, "Happy birthday, Raw." I'm like, it's not the birthday. It's a milestone show, is all. It's not a birthday. Anyway, Seth Rollins comes out. He's wearing a black suit, and crowd gives him a hero's welcome. There was certainly no lack of enthusiasm for Seth Rollins. The crowd was very into this, and it played out. If you read Jim Ross's blog, if you follow him on Twitter, played out exactly as he indicated it would. Set the crowd up, get them behind you, and then turn on them. And, I mean, it... I really question this, folks. I really do. You have a babyface champion that a lot of people, I'm not going to say everyone, but I feel like, by and large, the masses that are showing up at television, certainly pay-per-views, don't want to cheer Roman Reigns. Meanwhile, I really get the sense that, well, certainly those same people booing Roman Reigns want to cheer Seth Rollins. And you can say, well, what about the smaller town? You know, what about the families that go to the live events and all? You can come up with a lot of excuses. Here's one of the things that I don't like about the direction they chose, which is Seth Rollins being a heel and Roman Reigns still being this love me, hate me, whatever you want to do kind of guy. The whole John Cena thing all over again. By the end of the Seth Rollins promo, I felt like I'd been there and done that. And I really enjoy Seth Rollins' work as a heel. I was ready for Seth Rollins to turn, and it wasn't that I expected it going in. They're stubborn. They're just set in their ways on Roman Reigns. Does it work in the sense that you're getting a great crowd reaction? I mean, they had a crowd that was dead following two Disappointing matches at Extreme Rules. Roman Reigns comes out, crowd goes nuts. Yeah, and nuts in terms of booing him to a large degree. Women like him, you know, families at the house shows like him. Seth Rollins, I really feel like there was a chance that they wouldn't have to play this silly game of love him, hate him, whatever. Yeah, all that nonsense that they're doing, all the John Cena lines that they're doing for Roman Reigns. It worked for John Cena. I don't know that it's going to work long-term for Roman Reigns. It makes for a good atmosphere for the main event. Is it really the best thing for the company to have a champion, a babyface champion, a top babyface that fans, as many fans dislike as they do Roman Reigns? And I know Will Pruitt, .NET staffer, feels like it's the best thing going right now. He really enjoys it. That's cool, and I'm sure he's not alone in that. For me, I would give me the opportunity in a guy like Seth Rollins to have a babyface, a top babyface, coming back from an injury, going for a title that he was never beaten for, against a heel Roman Reigns, and maybe, just maybe, you'll have a top babyface that everyone likes, or at least, you know, by and large, that 90%+ of the people would like. They've convinced themselves that it's just because of the times. It's because you can't make everybody like your top babyface. They point to John Cena. It's one example, people. It's one. And it worked for them. And I think Roman Reigns is going to be okay in this role. It's not that I question, like, I don't feel like the sky is falling and this is just terrible and Roman Reigns is awful. No, not at all. I just feel like you had a chance in Seth Rollins to take a more traditional approach, but they are so stubborn and they're so set in their ways on Roman Reigns, they're not budging. What's the worst that would happen if Roman Reigns was a heel? I mean, honestly, they're loaded with top with good baby faces. They need heels. And I know that was kind of following along with Will last night on Twitter. Not trying to pick on Will by any means. He can handle himself, and I know he will. He was just pointing out, like, well, hey, you know, they need a heel, and they got their number one heel back. We've been there and done this with Seth Rollins. I want something new. I want something fresh, and I don't feel like I'm going to get that. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, I mean, maybe they have some twists and turns along the way. And it's not that I'm not looking forward to Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. Again, I just kind of felt like by the time that opening segment was finished, I felt like I'd been there and done that with Seth. And not that it was a bad promo by any means. He did a good job of doing exactly what Jim Ross said. Set them up, let them cheer you, and then turn on them. That was the gist of this. And eventually Roman Reigns came out, and Rollins dropped his mic and was ready to fight. And then, of course, Roman gets in the ring, and, well, Seth heads out the other side. Shane McMahon comes out. He ends up by calling Seth back and basically saying, you know, we can have a gentleman's discussion or something along those lines. And the fans start chanting, "You've still got it." I'm like, who are they chanting? Is it Shane for coming to the ring? I guess. I wasn't quite sure. I didn't think it was for Seth at that point. Shane recalled Seth turning on the Shield and cashing in his Money in the Bank contract at WrestleMania 31. And then he booked Reigns against Rollins. He said it had a WrestleMania main event written all over it, but fans wouldn't have to wait that long. It is the main event of the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And Rollins was fearful of Roman Reigns until then, and then he was very happy about that. And he left the ring very, very pleased. And then Roman was shaking Shane's hand in the ring. So we're going to get Reigns against Rollins at Money in the Bank. And I wonder if they'll play up this possibility now that Dean Ambrose won a Money in the Bank qualifier. Hey, if Dean wins, he can turn that into a triple threat of the Shield guys. And they would be crazy to do that. You don't give that away. Whenever you have that match, the triple threat between the former Shield members, that's something you advertise well in advance. But you can at least tease the possibility. Nothing wrong with that, as long as you're not false advertising. You're just telling people it's a possibility. There's a way to do that and at least kind of whet people's appetites for that. And again, I do want to say, a good opening segment, and not criticizing the Rollins promo, just did have that feel of, I've kind of seen this before with Seth, and all the talk about the new Seth Rollins slogan, redesign, rebuild, reclaim, kind of feels like retread to me, kind of feels like a rerun to me. Again, hopefully they have some twists and turns. Backstage, Renee Young interviewed Sheamus about facing Sami Zayn, and he was just mocking the idea of Sami Zayn in general. He just talked about that stupid little hat that he wears on his head on his way to the ring, which is comical because I think Sheamus wears something similar outside the ring at times. He ended up warning parents about what he intended to do to Sami saying it won't be suitable for all ages. And then they went to that match, and it was Sammy beating Sheamus in 10 minutes to qualify for Money in the Bank. This was cool. It was good use of Sheamus, who really has just been, you know, he doesn't mean much. I want to say, you know, hey, this is, it means something for Sami Zayn to beat Sheamus. It does. But keep in mind that Dolph Ziggler just beat Sheamus on SmackDown, too. It wasn't that impactful when Sami won this match, but it's still, you know, the energy of the match was good enough, and the crowd was behind Sami Zayn, that it came off like a good win, but just not that major win for Sami Zayn that I felt like it could have been. And I like that Sheamus was showing a lot of frustration afterward. Cole was really laying it on thick about Sheamus winning Money in the Bank last year and then cashing in successfully, and then how he failed to even qualify for this match. And so you could tell, like, okay, they're doing something with Sheamus here. This isn't just a random loss like the one to Dolph Ziggler was. Then we ended up with a little tease for what Charlotte would be doing later in the show. They went backstage when Renee Young interviewed Apollo Crews about his match with Chris Jericho, and was talking about, you know, he had the thumbtacks and the match that he went through, and Apollo conceded that Jericho would be feeling it. Well, angry Sheamus shows up and attacks Crews, and then asked if he thought he was better than him, and ended up leaving Apollo Crews lying backstage. So, again, it's nice to kind of see them do something with Sheamus. I think he's kind of fighting a losing battle as far as the way they have him positioned as being, you know, kind of the old guard against the new guard types. You know, they keep driving us nuts with the new era slogan, and he's kind of the angry guy. He doesn't like this new era. He's bitter with life, and so he's going to take it out on them. I say losing battle because I don't think it's something they're going to script him to win. Doesn't mean he can't win some matches along the way. But I think it gives him purpose, and I'm happy to see that because he's really been spinning his wheels. You know, even the title reign was really weak. I mean, it was just, you know, kind of an emergency situation where they went to Sheamus, and then League of Nations, which is such a disaster. I hope they can find a way to do something with Sheamus, make him feel relevant again. New Day came out. They had a giant cake in the ring, and it turned out that it was for the 1,200th episode of Raw. Kofi Kingston even sang happy birthday to Raw. New Day, very popular with this crowd. There's some towns where you can just tell, like, yeah, you know, this crowd's not as into New Day. The last couple of nights, they've been very into New Day. And then Big E even talked about how the ring isn't a safe place for a cake, and so he took it to ringside. He's throwing it on a very young fan in the front row. And fortunately, the young fan seemed to get a kick out of this. I was waiting for the kid to start crying. You never know how that's going to go with fans that young. But then he brought it over and teased, throwing it on JBL, who just, I mean, you would have thought like he was going to have like some sort of nuclear waste dumped on him or something if this thing touched him. And then Byron Saxton as well. What's left of the Social Outcasts? There's still three of them. Heath Slater, Bo Dallas, and Curtis Axel attacked New Day from behind and then took a victory lap around the ring heading into the break. When they came back, we got a portion of New Day beating the Social Outcasts in a six-man tag in about 90 seconds of TV time, roughly. First, Slater takes the big ending combo. I don't know if New Day has a name for that Kingston and Big E combo move where he comes off the top rope and does something while Big E performs the big ending. They did that on Slater, and then afterward they ran Slater into the cake and smeared it all over his face. Ha 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 ha. You know, I kind of mock it, but let's be real. Wrestling fans, I know there's just something about you watch it, they go crazy for this stuff. There's a reason that people get put through cakes in pro wrestling because, if nothing else, I think the casual fans really, really enjoy it. And I think some of you listening who publicly would be like, oh, this is stupid, you like it too, admit it. From there, we went to a little bit of hype for what was coming up later in the show and also some hype for the Shane McMahon interview. By the way, I'm not going to spend time talking today about the Shane McMahon interview. I assume Bruce Mitchell and I will get to it during the live cast. I'm sure we'll spend some time on it. It's going to come up with callers. But and then either way, at some point during .NET Weekly this week, I'll be discussing that as well. But you can find my full rundown of the interview. I did it live as it aired last night. And again, that's why you're hearing this today. The third match on the show was Cesaro beating The Miz in 11:15 to qualify for Money in the Bank. Miz had Maryse with him. He got a long promo before the match, and it just about overcoming insurmountable odds and talking about himself as Rudy and all this other stuff. I think it was a very good promo by Miz. I mean, his delivery is fine. He's always good in that regard. It just didn't seem to garner much in the way of heat from the live crowd, and this should have felt like a big win for Cesaro. I was actually waiting for this to be, and I'm someone who kind of defends Miz as far as like, hey, make him look credible, don't make him out to be a joke. But in this situation, I wouldn't have blamed them if it had this been just a very lopsided, quick and decisive win for Cesaro, beating the Intercontinental Champion in a non-title match, yet something still at stake where Cesaro gets to qualify for Money in the Bank. But instead, it took 11 minutes and 15 seconds, and it was a decent match. They, Miz was targeting Cesaro's injured shoulder, so Cesaro would be dominating the match, and then Miz would attack the shoulder, and that would stop everything. Like, Cesaro couldn't even perform the swing at one point. But it was late in the match when Miz went up top, and then he ended up jumping into a Cesaro uppercut, and then Cesaro performed the neutralizer for the win. So Cesaro qualifies for Money in the Bank. From there, we had Renee Young interviewing Seth Rollins backstage, and he said it would be fitting for him to take back his title of Money in the Bank because that's kind of his thing. And he approached Stephanie McMahon, who was off camera, and tried to hug her. She put her arms up. Stephanie said it's good to see him, but things have changed, including their business relationship. And she shook his hand and welcomed him back. And Rollins looked a little bit surprised by that. My first thought was just, all right, she's faking it. And if she's not, then they're probably, somehow Shane McMahon is the evil SOB in all of this. And I don't want to see that either. Maybe they'll drag the Stephanie thing out longer than I think, but I still feel like they had her show her true colors when she canceled the Dean Ambrose show, the Asylum talk show, like a week into this I'm a nice girl run. I gotta say, though, we didn't see them at the pay-per-view. Shane and Stephanie saw very little of them on this show. Good. It's not that I don't want to see them ever. It's I want to see them when they have something good for them. And recently, they need to kind of establish what they're doing. I get it with Stephanie and Shane and the dynamic there with Stephanie acting like she's a changed person or whatever. But it wasn't making for very good television. And so until there's really something for them to do, I kind of feel like the less we see of them, the better. And it was good use of them on Raw with Stephanie in this segment and then Shane setting up the Money in the Bank main event. It was fine. Good stuff. Then we went to Chris Jericho coming out, and he had all sorts of bandages all over his back from the thumbtacks the night before. I had to laugh at that. Maybe I shouldn't, but I did. And then when they came back from a commercial, we ended up getting that match. And they showed Sheamus watching it on a backstage monitor. I thought, okay, he's going to come out and do something to Cruz. No, he just sat there and watched, and Jericho ended up catching Cruz of the Codebreaker and pinning him in 7:45. So Jericho qualifies for Money in the Bank. There was a spot where I don't know what they were going for. Jericho went to do the Lion Salt, and at the same time, Cruz kips up. And I don't know if there was miscommunication, and Cruz kipped up at the wrong time, thinking Jericho was doing something else, or if Cruz was supposed to be able to do something, if they had some dynamic spot plan that just went wrong. So I'm not quite sure there, but it looked painful for Cruz when he ended up having Jericho Lion Salt him as he was standing, but they recovered, and so Jericho gets the win, and they showed Sheamus backstage, and he was pleased by this. In fact, Renee Young approached him and asked him for his reaction. He just laughed and walked off. I had someone on Twitter last night ask me if I think there's any chance that Jericho could win the Money in the Bank briefcase and then go on hiatus, and then it would be kind of a mystery as to when he would show up again. There was a time when I would have said, it's kind of intriguing. I don't want to see that now. I can't rule it out completely, but I don't want to see that right now. I just don't. I wouldn't be all that excited about Chris Jericho cashing in. It'd be a cool moment when he showed up, but I wouldn't be sitting around daydreaming about Chris Jericho potentially beating Roman Reigns and becoming champion. So again, I can't say they won't do it. I'm just saying I wouldn't do it. From there, we had JoJo interviewing Baron Corbin, who said he low-blowed Dolph Ziggler at the pay-per-view because he can. Which is true. He could. He was able to. No DQ match. What's the problem? Ziggler showed up, and he wasn't happy about this. He asked Corbin about trying to beat him in, I don't know, technical wrestling match. And Corbin said he didn't grow up watching WWE and dreaming of being the best wrestler. He grew up beating up punks like Ziggler. And he said once he knocked out Ziggler, they could talk about his technical wrestling. And once he actually woke up, that is. And Ziggler mentioned his Money in the Bank qualifying match and said he's going to do something that Corbin can never do. I'm like, oh, what's this? Steal the show. Oh, boy. Give it up with the steal the show stuff. How about winning a match? You mock him for How about beating me in a technical wrestling match? Well, how about winning a match instead of stealing the show? And this was not a good backstage segment. Ziggler was fine. You know, I mean, he's just Dolph Ziggler. Corbin, not a good night on the mic. He didn't deliver his lines well. And I like Baron Corbin a lot. I still have high hopes for him in WWE. It may not be something that, I guess I just hope that they don't lose patience with him, because I think there is something there, and they should be, you know, take your time with it, and, you know, just treat him well. And, you know, he should probably still be in developmental. But I think they have something there. It's just not polished yet. And so I thought this was bad. I didn't think he delivered his lines well at all. In fact, I thought there were a lot of bad promos on this show. Big Cass comes out. He points to the back. Enzo Amore returns. And it wasn't the greatest return promo. The crowd very happy to see him. It had energy when he came out. I don't know, there was just something. It didn't feel like they put a lot of thought into the way they brought Enzo back. I thought they would have tried to create more of a moment, because, you know, fans, you could tell every week that Big Cass would come out, fans were, you know, they kind of have that intro part of their entrance music, and I think there was a little bit of disappointment every time Cass came out. I really thought it was going to be a big deal. I thought people would go nuts when Enzo came back, and he even though he's so new to the main roster, it's like he's made an impression with that mic work. And again, the crowd was excited, but there was nothing really special about his return. I felt like they could have scripted this to be a bigger moment somehow, some way. But he just, I didn't think it was a great promo from Enzo either. Not by his standards. I felt like we've heard some really good ones, and I just didn't feel like the lines were there. There weren't many laugh out loud. I don't know if there was any. You know, he just talked about, if he had a dime for whenever he got knocked out and didn't get back up, he would have 0 dimes. It's like, okay, that's, you know, that was probably the best line of the bunch. And then he talked about how the Dudleys are full of baloney. Not a great, by Enzo standards, nothing special here. And Big Cass delivered his lines, and then they hyped Bubba Ray against Big Cass for after the break. Did they forget, like, the Vaudevillains were technically the ones who injured Enzo? I mean, they're kind of, it almost feels like they're making it about the Dudleys when, if you think about it, it was the match against the Vaudevillains, the tournament finals at, was it Payback, where Enzo suffered the injury. And so maybe they'll still get to that. Maybe this is kind of a temporary thing. I mean, clearly they had plans to feud Enzo and Cass with the Dudleys before. It's kind of questionable at this point, because they have not treated the Dudleys well. Big Cass just made them the whipping boys. I mean, he was just beating both Dudleys in singles matches, and then if they would get in the ring in a handicap situation, he'd just dispose of them easily. And so I can't say I'm excited about this program now. And there was when they first heated things up, or when they, you know, first started teasing, I mean, right from the get-go, it was Enzo and Katz and the Dudleys, and it's like, yeah, this is good use of the Dudleys, but I don't think they're treating the Dudleys well enough where this is going to feel like a big deal when Enzo and Katz eventually beat them, you know, to win the feud. Seth Rollins is going to be on ESPN News tonight, the SportsCenter segment with Jonathan Coachman. They told us that during the show. Cole actually gave it a little hook, saying that people could find out how he was able to return from his major knee surgery so quickly. The fifth match was Big Cass beating Bubba Ray in 4 minutes. They did not have him go back to the East River Crossing, which they botched. I mean, it was, I think it was on SmackDown last week where that just looked terrible. Instead, it was a big boot and an Empire elbow for the win. Enzo's really, his only real role in this was to be knocked down by Devon from behind. There wasn't like a big moment for Enzo either. And so yeah, it just kind of flat, the return of Enzo Amore. I felt like it should have been a lot bigger than it was. We saw Ric Flair, Dana Brooke, and Charlotte walking together backstage. They came back from commercial, and it was time for that segment. Long story short here, we'll start with this. Charlotte doesn't know how to react to the what treatment. She kind of fed into it and was bickering with at the crowd about it, which only makes them do it more. Then at one point, she started speeding up her lines and not leaving any room for breaks whatsoever, no pauses, because then the crowd would chant what? And she kind of slowed back down. It was once they got past that, she was fine. This felt really rushed. This whole screw you, Dad, I'm on my own. I'm bigger than you are. I mean, it you could kind of see the potential for this, the way she started treating Ric Flair last week in Greensboro, where, he started to woo and she cut him off. That should have gone on a lot longer. This should have been something that played out over weeks, if not months, where and then you finally get to that moment where Charlotte does this. And I think they went for shock value. It may also be they're ready to stop doing business with Ric Flair on a weekly basis again, and maybe some of the maybe that sped things up. I don't know, but I just felt like they could have established Dana. And you could have teased, you could have just built to this slowly, and then Charlotte and made Flair seem a little sympathetic before you did this, because he's been the guy endorsing everything his daughter does, all the cheating, getting co-credit for lining up Charles Robinson and Dana Brooke the night before at Extreme Rules, and there's not much very sympathetic about Flair. But I mean, they're able to play on the fact that the fans do adore Ric Flair by and large, and so that helps it. But I still felt like the angle could have been better had they been a little more patient with it. But Charlotte did a nice job. The broadcast team actually put this over. Even JBL was acting outraged by it, calling it disgusting and pathetic. So it was they finally the broadcast team is bothered by something. I mean, JBL's the heel, so it means something coming from him. He's bothered by the baby faces normally, but Michael Cole, Byron Saxton will kind of bicker with JBL and take the side of the baby faces. And Cole just, there's too many times with Michael Cole where he just reacts in a way where he's almost endorsing the heels cheating somehow. But that wasn't the case here, so it was nice to see. Charlotte did sing the goodbye song at her father after she told him that basically that he will be known as Charlotte's dad instead of her being known as Ric Flair's daughter. Ric Flair did tweet today that he will always love his daughter, but she will always be Ric Flair's daughter. He said basically, or she said, now he knows what she felt like for the last 30 years of her life. So it puts more heat on Charlotte. Dana Brooke was established by Ric Flair. His delivery of the line was a little bit awkward, but the idea, and because I had to explain this to somebody last night, at least what I assumed was the idea was that Ric Flair was basically implying that Dana Brooke is now Charlotte's Uncle Arn Anderson. Kind of her. She's what Arn was to Rick all those years. So I didn't get a feel for what Dana is going to add to this act yet. I don't know if they just feel like Charlotte needs someone in her corner. Can't say I'm blown away by the pairing of these two. And Jake Barnett was right the other night when he and I were talking about Extreme Rules. He felt like they were going to keep the Dana and Charlotte keep them together. And he probably thought Ric Flair was going to be part of it too, at least temporarily. I don't remember, but I was thinking it was a one-off just because I don't really see it. I'm not really sure what Dana brings to this, but we haven't had a chance to see it unfold. She was with Emma, and she is Dana's best attribute is her mic work. Charlotte's pretty good on the mic. I don't know that Dana's going to get a real chance to shine. I don't real. I mean, long-term potential. Are fans going to react to Dana as a babyface at some point if they want to go that route? I don't know. Is she ever going to become enough strong enough heel to be to get to the point where she turns on Charlotte and the fans react? We'll see. I'm just kind of taking a wait and see approach on this one, but I can't say the pairing jumps off the page at me. From there, we went to Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler in a Money in the Bank ladder match qualifier. It was Dean winning in 12:20. The crowd very quiet. They didn't know what. I mean, why wouldn't they be? What do you cheer for? If they like Dolph Ziggler and they like Dean Ambrose, what do? You just kind of sit back and watch the match and react to the moves you like. There was one spot in here where Ambrose ends up taking a super kick from Dolph, who had Jake Barnett recently praised him, well, actually on SmackDown, for finishing a match with it when so many other people have to hit, 20 of them in the same match, basically. But he actually finished a match then on SmackDown. Ambrose just kind of stumbles backwards into the ropes and then comes right up with his clothesline. Sounds like he just completely no-sold the super kick. He ends up winning clean with Dirty Deeds. So Ambrose joins Zayn, Cesaro, and Jericho at this point as four of the seven men in the Money in the Bank match. Then we saw a very somber Ric Flair walk past Titus O'Neil and Zack Ryder. Titus at least looked concerned. Zack, I don't think we were supposed to be looking at Zack, but I couldn't help it. He just didn't look like he cared. And then Arn Anderson approached Rick and asked him if he was okay, and Arn told him that he was sorry, and ended up shaking hands. Flair kept walking until Renee asked if there was anything he wanted to say. I rewound it like two, three times. I had the subtitles going. I didn't make out what Flair had to say, but I'm guessing, I think it was something along the lines of too soon, or, you know, to say anything or something like that. I'm not sure. But what I did catch was that they, as Ric Flair walks out the door after saying whatever he said to Renee, which is just one quick line, they kind of zoomed in on the printed sign that read, "Exit." So in case you didn't know, this was Ric Flair's exit, and then they went to a commercial break. We got a Shining Stars pre-tape. They were not in Puerto Rico. But they did invite fans to come to Puerto Rico. So they're still a thing. AJ Styles comes out, and the broadcast team recapped his loss to Roman Reigns the night before, and he talked about how you don't know how good someone is until you get in the ring with that person. And he said after working with Roman Reigns for the last 6 weeks or so, we can say he is every bit as good as they say. And there were some boos. But AJ kind of held his ground with the fans, but he did concede that Roman Reigns is not phenomenal. And he said that he had Reigns beat in the middle of the ring, though. If it wasn't for the Usos, Karl Anderson, and Doc Gallows, he'd be the new champion right now. He said he has the opportunity to beat Kevin Owens on his own and go on to Money in the Bank. Well, cue Anderson and Gallows. They come out. They're not happy about AJ including their names in this, and Anderson said it sounded like Styles didn't want them out there fighting by his side. And AJ said he's told him that from the beginning, that he wanted to do it on his own. And Styles said that things have changed now. And Anderson said that's true because, you know, as far as Japan, because he said if this were Japan, AJ would have bought them a round of drinks for having his back. Anderson said Styles has changed. And Gallows said that there are bar fights that Styles would not have walked out of if it wasn't for them, and he may not have walked out of Extreme Rules if it wasn't for them. And Styles said that they didn't have to break up their friendship. He said they could do their thing, and he could do his, but for right now, he said, we're done. And then the fans reacted in a way, and he says, I don't care what they think. I'm like, really? You're going to be the babyface in this? You don't care what they think? Kind of a strange line. He says, listen to me, but nothing and no one can separate us from being brothers. And then he held up the Too Sweet sign, and that was not good enough for Gallows and Anderson. Gallows says, how dare you talk to us like that, and then stand here and try to call us brothers. And Anderson said they're not brothers or friends anymore. AJ said they don't need to be in his ring anymore, and then added that for now, it is his ring. And then Anderson and Gallows ended up leaving, and Cole said that Styles would go it alone against Kevin Owens in the main event, which was a qualifying match, and they went to a commercial. Can't say, this wasn't like a terrible segment. I didn't feel like it was a strong segment either. I didn't feel like the mic work was all that great. I think I've just grown accustomed to AJ after all these years. And so I can't really put myself in the shoes of a fan who's fairly new to AJ. But with Anderson and Gallows, it's not like I've heard them do a ton of mic work together. The whole thing had a bit of an indie-rific feel to it. It didn't feel polished. It just kind of felt like another and a long night of kind of poor promos, some poor mic work throughout this show. Again, not that it was terrible, but it didn't leave me very excited to see what comes next as far as the main event or in this storyline. I mean, I just assume that Anderson and Gallows are very bitter, and they're going to take it out on AJ, and I don't know where they go from there. The main event was intriguing to me, though, because, it was the two guys that I thought were the favorites to win Money in the Bank. Ambrose is certainly in that mix, by the way. But I really thought either AJ or Owens were very good candidates to win the Money in the Bank match. And here you had them both working this qualifier. So one of them was going to be ruled out. And when I saw that angle, I thought, oh, Anderson and Gallows are going to come out and cost AJ the match. Never happened. Before we get to it, though, we did get the hype for John Cena's return next week, and then we ended up with the announcement. Believe it or not, they are advertising more than a talk show segment for SmackDown. I can't believe it either. We're getting two title matches. We're getting The Miz against Cesaro, and we're getting Rusev against Kalisto for the U.S. Championship. So two different title matches advertised for SmackDown. You can join Jake Barnett for live coverage of that show as it airs on USA Network on Thursday night, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. And if anyone's going to the taping tonight in Norfolk, we could definitely use a correspondent. Email me at dotnetjason@gmail.com, dotnetjason@gmail.com. And then the main event itself was Kevin Owens beating AJ Styles in 16:40 to qualify for Money in the Bank. He ended up hitting with the pop-up powerbomb and pinning him clean. No Anderson, no Gallows, no nothing. The broadcast team, I think it was JBL, who said that it had been a tough 24 hours for AJ Styles. And so they're not just... I guess I'm not sure where they're going with AJ other than something with Anderson and Gallows. I have no problem with Owens winning clean. I think that you can tell us, I'm hoping they are telling a story. The fact that the bro, kind of like, it's different. I don't want anyone to think, like, start, you know, feel like I'm comparing where AJ's at to where Sheamus is at, but it's similar in that sometimes you see somebody lose and it's done in a way where the focus is all on the winner. And so it's just the guy lost and, you know, he's not the focus and you kind of worry about him. In this case, that line, kind of like Sheamus, the way they were paying attention to Sheamus losing, the way they talked about it being a tough 24 hours for AJ and having two great matches, but being on the losing end of both tells you that there's, you know, it's not just all about Kevin Owens winning and they're down on AJ, not at all. So I don't know where they're going with this. I said not intrigued to see. I guess I am to some extent. It's not, but I just kind of wonder how much of all this Japan talk is going over the heads of, or not even going over the head, because I think it's been done in a way, all the talk with Anderson, Gallows, and Styles about their time in Japan. You know, there's been a lot of concern that casual fans aren't getting this, they haven't introduced Bullet Club properly, and you can't. I mean, it's another promotion's intellectual property, but I have kind of tried to ask myself, like, but how have they? They've talked about Japan. There's a friendship there. And it stems from them working together in Japan. Do they need to know that much more than that? I mean, have they? I don't think they're going. It'd be nice if they did, but I don't think they're going so insider with this that if you don't know the history, you're just completely left in the dark going, what are they? What's going on here? But I do wonder if there's a disconnect. If there's, you know, when they start talking about buying drinks in Roppongi and all this, whatever. I mean, I know there's fans who are familiar with their history are going to like that, but I don't know, watching that segment between the talking segment with AJ, Anderson, and Gallows, I really did kind of sense, just looking at the crowd, like, you know, some are into this, some are not, and I kind of wonder if that's a fair representation of what was happening at home, too, or it's just some fans going, why should we care? And that's the other part of this. Anderson and Gallows are guys who trade wins with the Usos. You know, they trade wins and losses with them. And AJ, you know, he had a couple of chances to beat Roman. He had two really good matches with Roman. But how excited are fans going to be about the guy who lost the last two pay-per-view main events? Not that it's a horrible thing, but out there with, you know, bickering with two guys that he didn't really have a lengthy relationship with in WWE, but we will see where that goes. But Owens, I mean, I like that Owens is in Money in the Bank. I do think he is a strong candidate to win this. He's the guy that I would go with. They may look at Dean Ambrose, but we don't even know the whole field, so I don't want to spend too much time on that. I'm sure we'll be talking about that in the days ahead. But Owens is a guy that you can just see him with the briefcase and mouthing off about it and always having, you know, always being that threat to cash in. I think it would work well. But I didn't like that we didn't hear from Kevin Owens. I mean, Kevin Owens is working the Raw main event against AJ Styles. AJ Styles gets some mic work, and it's all about breaking up with the club. And we never hear from the best talker, arguably, in the entire company, Kevin Owens. I mean, the match was very good and all that, but I think you could have got the crowd excited about this. You could have got the viewing audience at home excited to see this match had you turned Kevin Owens loose. And so they failed there. Disappointing that they didn't do that. But overall, yeah, I just felt like this was interesting. I mean, you just kind of read through it, and it's like, well, a lot of things happen. But I didn't feel like there was good atmosphere. I didn't like some of the decisions that were made. And I felt like it was a night of mostly, not all, but most, just a number of poor promos. It was not a good night in that area. Some things that should have felt bigger, like Enzo, just kind of left me feeling a little bit flat. Not a great show from WWE. We'll see what they do next week, but at least we know 5 of the 7 Money in the Bank ladder match participants. But that is going to do it for me today, at least on this particular show. Again, I'll be on the live cast at pwtorchlivecast.com at 4 Central, 5 Eastern. Your telephone calls are welcome during the show. And then members will hear me most likely tomorrow with the TNA Impact Wrestling audio review. But that is going to do it for now, everyone. Thanks again for listening. I will talk to you soon. Take care.